Your skin is clammy. There's grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and 5 hours to kill.
Let's do this thing.
Bad of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to the Night Shift with Luke Boner.
As we rapidly approach the end of another week, I can sniff the weekend, and it's only Thursday. It's November 9. Good morning. And welcome to another Night Shift with me, Luke Boner. That is Jess out there. And together we intend to keep you company. And we would like you to participate as well. Why don't you jump on board and tell us what you're thinking? What's happening? What's wrong with the world? How can we fix it? What's right with the world? Give us a call and let us know. 133353. We're very close to 30,000 followers on our Facebook page, The Night Shift on Triple M. The tweet or the Twitter account is there. The handle is at MMM Night Shift. And email nightshift@triplem.com.au. If you can't get to the phone but you are able to get to a computer, send us an email. Let us know what it is you want to talk about. Include a phone number. Jeff or Jess. Did I just call you Jeff? It is gender equality, after all, in this day and age. So just before you go running off to HR, which you do once a week, just settle down, okay? Oh, Jess, it's a very sad, sad situation. Not only can't Jess keep a bloke, she can't even keep flowers. There is a story I'm going to tell you later this morning, and she is really annoyed because her mum told me the story. I rang Jess yesterday, and she was driving with her mum, and her mum is just back from overseas. So I said a quick hello. She said, oh, did Jess tell you about the flowers? So I'll tell you the story a bit later on, folks. It's very, very sad. Anyway, 133353 is the phone number. Plenty to talk about this morning. I love Mark Latham. I didn't really like him when he was a politician, when he was leader of the opposition. I thought he was a bit of a bully boy. But see, I didn't have the foresight that I should have had. Mark Latham is great because he gives us something to talk about. And he's done exactly that today. The former Labor leader has called for immigrants. And look, we put this story on Facebook early yesterday, and it has received a ton of response from you. So we'll go through that later this morning. But Mark Latham has called for immigrants to lose their social security after 12 months if they don't bother learning basic English. He went to Fairfield in Sydney's southwest 6 months after asking native Arabic and Vietnamese speakers on the streets if they spoke English, only to find nearly all of them didn't. After repeating the exercise and encountering the same response, he has proposed drastic action to address the issue of ethnic enclaves in a suburb where only 17% of its residents spoke English at home, as according to the 2016 census. After 12 months of welfare support, a decent period, people should be expected to pass a basic English test, he said. If they can't speak English after 12 months, we should be cutting off the welfare. Mr. Latham was a federal member of parliament from 1994 to 2005. He argues the lack of English skills is causing social isolation in that part of Sydney. Is this happening where you are? He said, what would you find with that policy, of course, is that people would get off their backside, learn English, and we'd all have a chance of having proper integration instead of ethnic enclaves in places like Fairfield in Sydney. He said this outside the Centrelink office. One older woman agreed when asked if that was a fair proposition. Well, I do, she said, because I feel that the pension and all the things are not equal for everybody, and I'm talking from experience, she said. Earlier this year, Mark Latham lodged a petition with Cumberland Council in Sydney's West after it put up a curtain at Auburn Ruth Aquatic Centre to shield Muslim women. Remember that? God, we got some calls on that too, didn't we? Anyway, Mark Latham, back in the news. It's worth discussing. Tell you what, the response on Facebook was just unbelievable. 133353. Now, I don't know whether you caught me on Sunrise yesterday, but one of the topics we talked about is something I wanted to talk about this morning. There was a story on a website called Nine Honey, and people get to put blogs on there. They write stories, they contribute. And one mother, Aussie mother, has written about her complete horror at what she saw downtown. She said, the other week I witnessed three adults smoking right next to a toddler in a pram. And she said it made my blood boil. The smoke was blowing into the child's face. And the adults had absolutely no regard for their actions, she wrote. I was horrified that the poor child had to sit there and be exposed to these chemicals. I was slowly driving by my car at the time, so I was unable to give them a piece of my mind. Instead, I gave them the death stare to express my disgust. If they had no shame in doing this in public for everyone to see, I can only imagine how they often expose the child to secondhand smoke in their own home. She wrote, more than a week later, I couldn't get the image out of my mind. Part of me felt like I should mind my own business, but the other part said I should speak up on behalf of the children who were not able to speak for themselves. I knew that they were technically not breaking the law, and it was at that moment I realised the law needed to be changed. What she's saying is it should be illegal to smoke in the presence of children. It is in cars. This woman who posted her thoughts, pounded away on the keyboard later that night, wrote a scathing open letter to the adults, which she published on her blog, Judgy Mummy, hoping at least someone would see it. She reminded people of the dangers of secondhand smoke, in which there are at least 250 harmful chemicals and more than 50 that are known to cause cancer. So, she's calling on the New South Wales government to ban people smoking around children. She says, we intervene when children are neglected due to alcohol or drug addictions, and should intervene when children are exposed to reoccurring passive smoke. People should be fined if they are found smoking next to a child. She goes on, parents who smoke around their kids should be supported to kick the habit and should be kept accountable. In instances where children are suffering severe health effects from their parents smoking, a safer living environment should be provided for these children. So where else does she want to take this? Are we monitoring what parents do in their homes? Should it be illegal to smoke in your home if there are children in that home? And if you're found guilty, what happens then? Are you reported to docs? Are the children taken away and put into a safe house, a non-smoking house? Where does this end? Does she have a point? Well, Jess put this story on Facebook as well. And it's also created quite a stir. Should it be illegal to smoke around children? You can't smoke just about anywhere else. May as well throw this one in. Does she have a point? Is it child abuse to smoke near a child? 133353 is the telephone number. There's something else we can chuck around this morning. Our employment expert, Graham Wynn, will join me later today. He sent me a very interesting article about a study proving that, yes, better-looking people climb up the career ladder faster. In fact, a study from Chicago and California universities found that those with a smart appearance have more frequent pay rises and earn around 20% more than those who don't pay attention to grooming. However, in hiring, it appears to be a different story. New research from the London Business School and published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology has found that beautiful applicants aren't always advantageous. The study gave 750 participants a photo of an attractive person and a photo of a less attractive person
and were asked to theoretically hire one for a job. The research found that participants were less likely to choose attractive people for less desirable jobs. Jobs like cleaning, manual labour, that sort of thing. I think Graham, he has this great story. He's told it before, but I'll get him to tell it again. Basically, Graham runs a recruitment office, and he was asked by a real estate agent to find a secretary, a receptionist that would sit out the front. What do they call it? The Minister for First Appearances, Minister for First Impressions. And he was told very clearly by the client, just hire me a looker. She doesn't have to know how to type. She doesn't need to know how to use Windows. She doesn't need to have any computer skills. She just needs to be attractive. Now, that's illegal. You are not allowed to hire someone on looks alone. But how do you police it? And Graham said it would have been absolutely ridiculous for him to send along unattractive applicants because they were never going to get the job. So he hired her a looker. 133353. Have you ever suffered discrimination because of the way you look? Give us a call, let us know. 133353 is the telephone number. Oh God, what about this story, hey? A supposedly drunk woman has been caught performing oral sex on a man that she had just met. She was performing the act on a flight to Detroit. She's 48, he's in his 20s. And guess what? There was a passenger asleep next to them. The Daily Mail reports a highly intoxicated woman was caught performing oral sex on a man 20 years her junior on a Delta flight from LA to Detroit, according to a police report. The 48-year-old California woman and the 28-year-old man were arrested upon reaching Detroit International Airport, but neither was charged with a crime. Passengers reported the pair to flight attendants after they saw the woman performing oral sex on the man. She was apparently trying to hide under a blanket, but not successfully. Another man slept next to them in the same row. The man and woman had met on the Delta flight to Detroit, and the woman then switched her seat so she could be next to him, according to a police report. A witness wrote in that police report that they went to the row and witnessed the lady in the man's lap performing fellatio. They had a blanket partially covering the act. The witness said that the woman sat up in her seat. The man tried to apologise, but they were arrested when they arrived at the gate, but then they were allowed to go. According to the police report, she had bloodshot eyes and was clearly intoxicated. Should they have been charged? They weren't. Should they have been charged with performing an indecent act in public? 133353 is the telephone number. Come on, what have you seen? Can you top that? What would you have done if you'd seen that? Would you have said something? I tell you what a lot of people would have done. They would have got out their smartphones and filmed it. Because that's what people do these days. 133353 is the telephone number. Once again, the contentious issue of smacking is one that continues to spark fierce debate. There are those who advocate for hitting a child with an open hand on the buttocks as a reasonable form of discipline, and then there are those who believe this is an outmoded way of managing a child's behaviour. According to current research, spanking is generally considered the least effective way to bring kids into line. And as well, it's been linked to an increased likelihood of poor health, social and development outcomes. Parenting expert Sharon Witt believes there are better strategies parents can deploy when it comes to disciplining kids. 30 years ago, smacking was the way children were disciplined, but now there are many other ways we can use to guide our children, she said. Anyway, I'll tell you more about this research. I don't know whether you can believe it or not. I was raised on smacking. And yes, go on. Yes, I'm about to say it didn't do me any harm. There are degrees, of course, of physical chastisement. But I was smacked. I got the wooden spoon. I never got a belt, you know, as in a belt around your waist. I had friends whose father used to strap them with a belt. No, but I got an open hand and I got a wooden spoon plenty. But according to current research, it's the least effective way to bring kids into line. We can discuss that this morning. 133353 is the telephone number. And just very quickly, my daughter came home last Saturday after taking the dog for a walk, and she said, "Dad, I've got a question for you. Are you allowed to have dingoes as pets?" And I said, "I don't know. I don't think you are." Holly was at the leash-free park of the weekend, and she saw what she thought was a dingo, and she got very nervous. And the owner came up, and she asked if it was a dingo, and he confirmed it was. "Are we allowed to keep dingoes as pets?" was her question. And I thought, well, I'll go straight to the expert, veterinary surgeon Dr. Rob Zammit. I have recorded a conversation with Rob. I did that late last night, and I'll replay it for you later today. I couldn't believe it, but Rob Zammit not only knows all about dingoes, he's one of the world's experts because he has just completed a thesis. It was a project that he and two professors from the University of New South Wales took upon themselves. It was a worldwide competition, and they did research on the DNA of the dingo. And the question was, is the dingo a domesticated dog that turned wild, or is it a wild dog that we attempted to domesticate? And apparently it's one of the last missing links in the theory of Charles Darwin. Well, they did their research, they lodged their response, and God damn it, they won. They came first, and it was a worldwide competition, and they came first. So I had no idea about that. He told me after I contacted him yesterday afternoon, so he's a bit of an expert in the DNA of the dingo. And then it got me thinking, there was a story in the news early this week about a young snake catcher in Brisbane. He catches snakes for a living, but apparently is fighting for life after being attacked by one of the world's deadliest serpents, a taipan. The 19-year-old is currently in hospital in intensive care as doctors attempt to save the life of this young man. Inland taipans, appropriately also known as the fierce snake, are regarded as having the most potent poison of any land snake in the world. Their poison can kill an adult in less than 45 minutes. So this young man, 19 years of age, was bitten by a taipan. Here's the clincher. The taipan was his pet. For Christ's sake, who in their right minds keeps a venomous snake as a pet? Anyway, talking about biting the hand that feeds you, he's in a serious way in hospital and hopefully will be okay. But what are some of the most stupid pets that people have had? We'll go through that later today. And what pets can you have and what pets can't you? Anyway, the truth behind the DNA of the dingo, and can dingoes make good pets? Maybe somewhere out there in Triple M land you've had a dingo as a pet. Give us a call and let us know. 133353. Look, plenty of other stuff I want to get to. We'll do that in the fullness of time. I'm sure you've got stuff that you'd like the rest of the nation to talk about. Maybe there's something that we've discussed during the week you haven't been able to get on. Have a crack now. 133353 is the telephone number. We've got plenty of time. We've got plenty of time and plenty to talk about. It is the Night Shift around Australia and around the world on the Triple M network. Telstra has actually agreed to offer remedies to around 42,000 customers for promoting and offering some of its national broadband network, the NBN speed plans, as being capable of delivering specified maximum speeds when those speeds will not be achieved and never were and never will. Between September 2015 and November 2017, Telstra offered internet services through both its Telstra and Belong brands, advertising a range of different speed plans. And this included a super fast speed boost, which advertised maximum download speeds of up to 100 megabits per second and maximum upload speeds of up to 40. It's never going to happen. And so now they're going to have to compensate customers for that. So I've got a funny feeling, Darren, that Telstra might be a little compliant on this because the ACCC is keeping a very close eye on all of that. And you watch when the NBN is finally delivered to all of Australia, which will be what? Sometime around 2084, I'm being facetious, you watch, people will be out there monitoring their upload and download speeds, and I would not be surprised if this is going to explode, and it could send some telcos to the wall in compensation. It is just a farce. It is just a farce. 133353 is the telephone number.
Oh, and God, strike me pink, Jess. Another one might be biting the dust. Jackie Lambie. She's denying citizenship concerns despite her father being born in Scotland. The Tasmanian crossbench senator has admitted her father was born in Scotland, but says she has no concerns about being a dual citizen. In a statement, Senator Lambie said her father migrated from Scotland as an infant and she was satisfied her parents were both Australian citizens. His father, my grandfather, came to Australia to enlist in the army, in fact. As far as I'm concerned, all their affairs are in order. It's one thing to be confident, Jackie Lambie. It's another thing to be correct. And you can't just assume. You cannot. This is what we've seen. You cannot just assume. You need to get your documents. Now, she says that she will not front up with any documents unless she's actually told to by the Senate. This is a joke. What needs to happen, and I've said it before, and I've said this a number of times over the last few weeks, the Parliament has to be shut down. And the word is called prorogue. To prorogue the Parliament means shutting it down without dissolving it. And the Governor General needs to act on this and needs to act on it now. Because what's going to happen is we've got two more weeks of Parliament, and that is two more weeks of where the opposition can get a free kick at the government and do some serious damage. Now, if I was the leader of the opposition, I'd be getting with my henchmen and my shadow cabinet ministers, and I'd be saying, okay, here we go. Look at this. The way things are going, the way this House of Cards is going, we may have the numbers here in the House of Representatives, which gives us an enormous amount of power, and we should act on this as quickly as possible. If I was the Prime Minister, I'd be going to see the Governor General, and I would say, let's prorogue the Parliament right now, not dissolve it, but just put the brakes on so that we can all get our mice in one hat. Now, I know the Prime Minister spoke with Bill Shorten yesterday and they've agreed on most things, but it's still a work in progress. But this is just a debacle. And I've said this before, you can't cherry pick what parts of the Constitution you want to follow and what parts you think are unnecessary. Otherwise, we would have people driving the wrong way, the wrong side of the road everywhere saying, well, I chose to ignore that particular law. The highest law of the land is the Constitution, and Section 44 says you can't have dual citizenship. You must be loyal to one country and one country alone, and that country is Australia. So, Jackie Lambie, it's okay to say you're pretty sure that you're safe, but you have to be more than pretty sure, because Barnaby Joyce thought he was pretty sure. Ed Canavan thought he was pretty sure. The rest of them thought they were pretty sure. Prorogue the Parliament. Just shut it down. 2 weeks to go. Who cares? Because unless that happens, I think the government's in a lot of trouble. 133353 is the telephone number. This is The Night Shift.
Loki?
Yeah, hi.
Shall we say it again to the nation? We've told you once.
We've told you twice.
We've been telling you for nearly 365 days.
Nearly, getting close.
Getting close, getting close.
When
please.
You're on hold, please don't participate in either alcohol or illicit drugs, because it doesn't make great radio.
It doesn't, because I spend, all right, I don't know if people know what I do. Should we tell them a little bit?
No, do we have to?
Okay, we don't have to. Gosh, you're rude tonight.
Sorry, go on.
Thanks. I chat to everyone. We have a solid yarn. How you going? What's your favourite food? And then we eventually get to the point of what do you want to talk to Luke about after I, you know, make friends with the nation.
Interrogate them, yes.
And when they're on hold for a little while, sometimes they crack poo or 10.
Yeah.
Doesn't work for me by the time they get on air. So can we please just not do that?
Helps them pass the time. If they're on hold listening to me, maybe it's better if you're on something. I wonder, 133353. We're going to tell the nation sometime soon about your flower disaster. Not only can't Jess hang on to a bloke, she can't hang on to their flowers either.
There's a story coming up. 133353. Paul on Twitter writes, when a friend of mine first fell pregnant, her doctor told her that giving up smoking would cause her more stress. Really? Email from Rodney. I'm 26. I have a leather belt and three girls, all under six. I grab both ends of the belt and I make it crack, and the girls stop playing up. I would never hit them with it, but the sound and the one glare and they stop. I don't raise my voice unless I have to. When I do, the kids come in line fast because they're not used to hearing my voice raised. I had several spoons broken over me to try and stop me from playing with fire. I used to love lighting them. It took my dad holding my hand over an open flame in order for me to stop. It wasn't to burn me, it was to feel the heat of it. And it worked. I never lit a fire in the house again. He held your hand over an open flame? That's not right. That's not right.
It's a bit dramatic, but I think what he's trying to say is he's not taking the same approach with his own kids.
Yeah, I know, but there's also another parenting rule. You never threaten to do something you're not going to go through with. So one day when the kids work out that dad cracking the belt is one thing, but dad actually using it's a completely other, then you're in trouble. I'm just saying.
Around Australia on the Triple M Network, this is The Night Shift with Luke Boner. The Night Shift.
But first, the tragedy that is Jess's love life as we continue this story of doom and woe and tears and the gnashing of teeth. Jess has a secret admirer, and he went to send her flowers yesterday. What's the story?
Well, I received a note from said admirer that they had been hand-delivered by him and left downstairs. I went down this morning.
Hang on. Why didn't he buzz security and have them brought up?
Outside of work hours. There's no one there.
He's smart, isn't he?
So they were left at the door, outside.
Yeah.
When I went down this morning, Lukey, there was nothing there.
There's nothing there.
And I was really excited. I was like, finally, someone's treating me right. No, nothing. Gone.
Flowers are gone.
Gone.
So what happened then?
Well, I conducted a full-blown investigation, as one does, obviously. I wanted my flowers. It's the first time anyone's ever given me anything. So I went to the techs.
You went to security?
I made two techs stop their job in primetime radio time, and I made them get the security cameras
up. Did you really?
Yeah.
You took the time of two busy technicians while they're in charge of how many radio stations?
Yeah, a couple.
Big radio stations.
Nationally.
And you said, can you please check the security cameras because if something's happened to my flowers.
Yeah.
Is this really what you did?
This is true. There were four screens going. Anyway, the camera didn't have a good enough view. So there was absolutely no footage. Are you all right? I mean, it's not that good a story.
It's just pathetic. Go on.
No footage. Went upstairs, searched the desks of the other radio station, got a few looks, no flowers to be seen. I went to the building next door.
Where they have a separate security system.
Yeah, and they were a bit nervous.
And the building next door is bigger than this building.
Yeah, and they took me, first question, how did you get in? I was like, look, don't worry about it. I'm here now. And I made them check the cameras.
You made them check their security cameras?
Yeah, and they got him. They saw the flowers being delivered, so it's a fair dinkum story. The flowers were here, 45 minutes they lasted, and a culprit walked up and stole them.
Did you watch it?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Was there a card with the flowers?
Card, everything gone.
Did the culprit read the card?
Oh, you'd hope not. Could have just left the card. I mean, what's he going to do with the card?
So that's that then.
Yeah, well, cheers.
That's it. That's your story.
Yeah.
You are sad, aren't you?
Well, it's just the beginning.
Foreigner said it best. It feels like the first time. feels like the first time every time on the night shift. Around Australia on the Triple M network.
Yeah, what about this story, hey? You'll hear about this today. A highly intoxicated woman was caught performing oral sex on a man 20 years her junior on a Delta flight from Los Angeles to Detroit, according to a police report. The 48-year-old California woman and a 28-year-old man were arrested upon reaching Detroit International Airport, but neither was charged with a crime. It happened on October 29. Passengers reported the pair to flight attendants after they saw the woman performing what appeared to be oral sex on the man and trying to hide under a blanket, while another man slept next to them in the same row. The man and woman had met on a Delta flight to Detroit, and the woman, so they met on the flight. The woman then switched her seat so she could be next to him, according to a police report obtained by the Detroit Free Press. A witness wrote in the police report that they went to the row and witnessed the lady in the man's lap. She appeared to be performing fellatio, a witness said. They had a blanket partially covering the act. The witness asked for boarding cards and names. The witness said that the woman sat up in her seat and the man tried to apologise. At about 3:30 p.m. on October 29, Detroit Metro Police received a report that two passengers were having intercourse on a plane flying into the airport. Per dispatch, the female involved was reported to be highly intoxicated, the report said. Police officers met the plane at the gate to speak to the couple. The man said that the woman had just fallen asleep in his lap, but that they did not have intercourse, adding that he had grabbed her breasts on the outside of her clothes because they were there. The woman, whose eyes were bloodshot and red, was reported to be uncooperative and yelled and screamed, being continuously disruptive, and she was taken from the flight. The passengers were apparently handcuffed and cited by the FBI for lewd and lascivious behaviour and for disorderly conduct. Police allowed both to get their luggage, but when they tried to help the woman rebook a flight, security said she was not permitted by Delta. She flew out the next day on a new flight without incident. I wonder who got to sit next to her on that flight. Just saying. But just getting back to this, they were not charged. They were cited, but not charged. 133353, should they have been? Do you think they should have been charged with something, or was it not hurting anyone? Well, I'm not sure. Maybe she had braces. I don't know. But should they have been charged? Have you ever witnessed anything like this? 133353 is the telephone number. Just thought I'd throw that one into the mix. Rick, g'day.
How are you, Luke?
I'm okay, Rick. What's going on?
Oh, nothing much. Are your eyebrows growing back since that time before, mate?
Well, look, we've done an investigation, and apparently they didn't disappear. They just dropped.
Oh, they just dropped. They dropped to under your nose. Is that right?
Well, not quite. Not quite. Hang on.
First of all, mate,
Hang on.
Lukey, you thought that I shaved your brows off as revenge. Did you take the flowers?
No. You're being a fool to yourself and a burden to others, Jess. I didn't think you shaved them off. I thought Holly had at home. Okay? And no, I didn't take your flowers, okay? What time were they delivered?
Around 11.
PM.
Yeah, I know it wasn't you. Did you send someone to do it?
And we went to Channel 7 at what time?
Yeah, but did you send someone to do it? You're always trying to get me.
No, I didn't.
Lukey doesn't want me to find love.
I didn't take your flowers. Sorry.
That's just sad, isn't it, Jess?
Mate, not only can't she keep a bloke, she can't keep his flowers. Okay, she reckons I have an ulterior motive. She reckons I don't want her to find love so that she stays committed to the radio program. That's her theory.
What do you mean? You've said that to me. It's not a theory, it's truth.
Did I actually say that?
Several times.
Sober?
Several times.
All right,
and not sober.
Goodbye. Sorry, Rick, go on.
You're right, Luke. Yeah, and I'm a one-hearted Holden fan and owner, mate.
Good boy. I said to my son went out to buy a car, and he only had a couple of $1,000s. And I said, if you come home with a Ford, do not park it in my driveway.
Oh, no, no. Wouldn't even park it out the front on the street in front of your house.
Yeah, he came home with a Holden Radeo.
Well, I suppose it's still got a Holden badge on it.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it lasted about 6 months and it fell apart. And it was only held together with rubber bands. He used to call it Rickety Red. Anyway, go on, Rick.
Anyway, I was just touching that story about Jess coming across a person in the street that was walking a dingo.
No, it was my daughter. It was my daughter, and
was your daughter?
Yeah, and it was at a leash-free dog park.
Yeah, well, yeah. Used to be a proud owner of a dingo for 15 years as a pup.
Was it a pure dingo?
It was a purebred dingo, and it was also registered through the council for every year it was alive and had all its vaccinations.
Okay, I've got some questions for you.
Yep.
How did you come by it?
Well, the only way I could own a dingo and register it was to come across it through a wildlife park.
Yeah. So how did you come by it?
Well, funny enough, I went to an expo, you know, and it was a mixed expo. And in one corner of this expo, they had these wildlife animals, farm animals, and wildlife animals from a wildlife park, and they had baby dingoes. And me being me back in 85, I sort of asked the question of, are they for sale? And to my surprise, you could buy one.
How much?
$150 back then with papers proving that I bought it from a wildlife park.
Yeah.
I then was able to prove that by going to the council and getting approval to have him on a council approval.
Yes.
To keep him.
Yes.
Because I had approval that I'd actually acquired him from a registered wildlife park and not caught him out near the back of Uluru.
So, it was a puppy?
Yes, it was 6 weeks old when I got him, and he lasted 14 years.
Was he a good dog?
Oh, absolutely. If I could have another one again, Luke, I would, but in Queensland, you're not allowed to have him. But back then, I was living in New South Wales, and we're allowed to have him, but I had to have restrictions. Wherever I lived, I had to have adequate fencing so that he couldn't get out.
Fair enough. You would want that for any dog.
Yeah, exactly. But being the breed he was, I had, you know, extra conditions on it.
Yeah.
He wasn't de-sexed. I took him at the age of four. I took him down to a dog obedience school to learn how to walk on a lead.
Okay. How did he go?
And he went very well. They go in classes from sitting down in one class, learning how to sit and stay seated, and then the next class up was to walk in between people that were holding their dogs, which was a bit hard at first because he wanted to growl at every dog, which I knew what he wanted to do, but that sort of overcome that. The next class up was they wanted me to leave him off the leash about 30 feet away from me, next to another dog, and we'd all stand 30 feet away and call our dogs up. And I said, no, I don't want to go that far because I know exactly what's going to happen here because of his instincts, he'll want to kill him. My main purpose was to go there to a training school just to get him to know what it's like to walk on a lead out in the street and stop at the side of the road when I stopped. That was basically it.
Were you constantly nervous when you took him out knowing that he could turn?
No, not really. I mean, my kids, when I was at home, when he was at home, he was so gentle with my kids. I mean, I had my kids, 3 and 4, used to feed him, hand feed him bacon rind, and he'd be so gentle taking it.
Because he saw your kids as members of his pack.
Yeah, but even around other people, he'd be great. He used to love hanging around more women friends of blokes that had come over because of their long nails. They'd scratch his back, and he'd rather hang around people that would scratch him all day. But, yeah, he was quite fine with other people, but I used to tell other people, let him approach you, don't approach him.
Mm.
He's the one that's got to approach you. Don't force yourself on approaching him because he sees that as a threat. Whenever I may have had a party, I had a secluded part of the yard that was fenced off for him only, which kept him away from party goers. Just taken to the beach, but he didn't like the beach, as they don't like waves. They used to like it was hard enough to get him in the bath. But
I've seen dingoes. I've driven in a four wheel drive all the way to Fraser Island and back, and there's plenty of dingoes along there.
Yeah, but a lot of them, Lurky, are half-breds.
Is that right?
Yeah, a lot of them now are half-breds. They've been mixed up with other dogs that have gone wild as well. There's not a lot of, I wouldn't say everything, every one of them on Fraser Island are pure.
Yeah. But you're telling me he was a great dog, but at the same time you're telling me that you were, I'm just picking up that you were probably a bit nervous about him the whole time as well.
Oh, around other people, because I have to keep warning him about not just approaching him like any other dog. Let him come up to sniff you and you can put your hand out and pat him.
Did he ever bite anyone?
He never got aggressive. He never bit anybody. He had a great life. He used to share my bed when he was younger. And I'll tell you what, if you leave your coffee on the floor in the lounge room, he'd drink that too.
What was his name?
His name was Warrigal.
Warrigal.
Yep. Appropriate Australian name.
Yeah. Well, listen, Rick, thank you very much. I've never spoken to a dingo owner before, but I've recorded a conversation with a dingo expert, Dr. Rob Zammit, and I'll be replaying that next hour, so have a listen.
Yeah, I will. I'll still be up. I'm just on my way into Rocky to go to Mackay tonight.
Okay, so. And for those of you who missed parts of the program, it's podcast. Jess, will Rob Zammit be on the podcast?
If you want him to be there, Lukey, I'll do it for you.
I think he should. So tell us about the podcast. How's it work, Jess?
If you're on Facebook, you just click up the top. There's a link to it, or you can just search the Night Shift Triple M podcast and it'll come up. And it's usually up within 2 hours after we're off air.
All right, good on you, Jess. Yeah, Jess does that every morning. So there you are. It used to be the whole show. It's not anymore. It's highlights now. Is that right?
Yeah, it's the best of.
Gee, do you have trouble?
Because, you know, tonight is anything to go by, yeah. We can't have it all in there, can we?
You'll be struggling to get the best of today.
Yeah. The Night Shift, around Australia on the Triple M Network. Boner. The Night Shift.
Just before I take some more calls, and all our lines are absolutely chock-a-block, so if you're trying to get through, just relax. Maybe send us a message on social media, Facebook or email, and leave your phone number. Twitter as well. Yes, Jess, she loves the Twitter. The handle is at MMM Night Shift. You won't believe this story that you'll read in your newspapers today. I hope you're sitting down. Migrants would be told not to bash their wives or harm their kids in the official Life in Australia handbook as part of a desperate measure to reduce domestic violence. Today's Daily Telegraph, and this will be making headlines right around the country in the News Limited Press. State Coroner Michael Barnes and a team of New South Wales domestic violence researchers are behind the idea. It aims to target wife bashers at the border by telling them that domestic violence is not tolerated in Australia. Under the recommendations, potential victims would also be taught on how to get help and escape abusive relationships. The Domestic Violence Death Review is likely to be raised at the National Meeting of Women Safety Ministers later this month, according to the paper. The recommendation calls for the federal government to either update the booklet given to migrants on arrival or produce another publication to be distributed to all persons coming to live in Australia. Mr. Barnes, the state coroner, has told the Daily Telegraph all his recommendations had a strong evidence base and were likely to contribute to a safer community.
He said his team did not have any data to show the problem was more prevalent in non-Western communities than Western communities. Let's just go back and have a look at that again. Migrants would be told not to bash their wives or harm their kids. It's the official Life in Australia handbook. Before we allowed somebody to live in Australia, wouldn't we have drilled this into them? Why are they getting this handbook when they arrive in Australia? When people apply to migrate to Australia, don't we teach them our rules, our laws, our customs? And if that's not acceptable, see you later. Don't even bother getting on the plane. New South Wales Domestic Violence Death Review team manager Anna Butler said migrants could be vulnerable because they didn't necessarily know what domestic violence was or know how Australia's laws work. She said if you have migrants perpetrating and experiencing violence, their vulnerabilities may be exacerbated by their migrant status. The logistics of being a new person in a new country, not having support networks, not necessarily understanding the laws, she said. Are we making excuses? Surely people know what domestic violence is. This story is on our Facebook page right now, if you'd like to leave a comment. The Night Shift on Triple M is where you'll find us. The Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, said he's already pushing for new citizenship measures that would test immigrants on Australian values. Well, Christ, don't give them a booklet once they're already here that we don't tolerate domestic violence in this country. Drill it into them before they even get on a plane. It's the official Life in Australia handbook. All right, you can read about it today. I'd love your thoughts. 133353 is the telephone number. Employing somebody based on looks and promoting someone based on looks, is it discrimination? Does it go on? Well, of course it does. We'll talk to Graeme Wynn, employment expert, about it shortly. Doug, g'day.
Yeah, Luke, how are you, mate?
Very well, buddy. What's up?
I'm in Rocky in Queensland, mate, and I with this dual citizenship saga that's been going on with the pollies lately.
Yeah, it's a joke, isn't it?
Sorry?
It's a joke.
Yeah. Mate, what I'd like to do is see if the politicians would look into see how many past pollies have had the same situation.
Yes.
And if that's the case, they should be made pay back all the money, mate, because it's fraud.
How many politicians have been guilty of this since Federation, since 1901?
Mm-hmm.
How many pieces of legislation have been illegally passed because it's been voted on by someone who should never have been in the parliament? That is such a can of worms, I don't even want to think about it. Doug, I actually have thought about it. And
yeah.
I don't know what do you do? What do you
do? Honestly, I believe that the government should form a group to look into it, because those that have actually sworn into parliament and they know that they're dual citizenship, it's actually fraud. They've taken the money from the Australian taxpayers. Wrongly, because they know it's fraud.
Yeah, and all this sprang from a question in the New Zealand Parliament from a member of the Labor Party in New Zealand trying to be mischievous. And look at what's happened and how many politicians have been guilty of this but have just slipped through.
Right. The other thing I wanted to mention to you, Luke, was also I believe that Australian people, the taxpaying people of Australia, should look at trying to abolish past poly pensions, because this is crippling Australia.
Mm. Oh, well, couldn't agree with you more. I don't mind paying them more while they're in there if they're doing a good job. But when it's finished, it's got to be over.
That's right. It's just like you and I. When we finish our work, we don't get any follow-ons, do we?
No.
So why should they?
Yeah, yeah. No, completely agree, Doug. Completely agree. No. But, you know, the first point you brought up is a ripper. Jeez, I'd love... Oh, God, I shudder to think, Doug.
I'd like them to look into it, really, myself. But
yeah, well, Sir Peter Cosgrove, look, I said this earlier, and I'll say it again.
Sir Peter Cosgrove, who is a terrific fella, but at the end of the day, he has a very important job as Governor General. And what he needs to do is he needs to sit down with the Prime Minister and the Leader of the Opposition and say, hey, we have a constitutional emergency here, and what we need to do is fix it. And the way we're going to fix it is we're going to have a complete audit. And in the meantime, we will prorogue the Parliament. That is, pause it, not dissolve it, but pause it. There's only 2 weeks to go. Uh-huh. That way, because I'm telling you now, if Bill Shorten was smart, if I was Bill Shorten, can I just tell you, I would be getting with my shadow cabinet ministers and my henchmen and my chiefs of staff, and I'd be saying, hey, these guys are in deep shit. They're going to lose a majority in the House of Representatives. We've got 2 weeks to cause enormous damage. Let's go.
Yep.
So I think the only way around this, and look, from what I understand, there are still people to come out of the woodwork on both sides of the Parliament. Prorogue the Parliament, pause it, have an audit, get everything out on the table, out in the open, and then start again.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, Doug. Listen, good to talk to you. Thanks for your call.
Thanks very much, Luke.
That's an absolute pleasure. Bye-bye. Have a good day.
Two. You got a boner all night. Luke Boner, the night shift. Around Australia on the Triple M network.
Well, here is another dilemma for the day. If you're hiring someone for a job, is it discriminatory to hire them on their looks? And if you do hire someone on their looks, how can you prove that discrimination has taken place? The other thing is, and our employment expert Graham Wynn joins us this morning, are good-looking people less likely to be hired for unattractive jobs? And are attractive people more likely to get hired and promoted? And here's another one. We'll throw this one in. If you are hiring for a job, are you less likely to hire someone if you think they're more attractive than you? Job attraction. It's the topic for the morning. Graham Wynn joins us now. G'day.
Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
Yeah. Fatal attractiveness.
It's a good one, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Let's start. There are a number of levels to this.
Yep.
First of all, you claim that good-looking people are less likely to be hired for unattractive jobs. What are those unattractive jobs?
Things like warehouse work, cleaning duties, that kind of job. The perception is that they won't hire good-looking people for those roles because good-looking people generally feel more of a sense of entitlement to something better. So even if they take the job, they won't stay there very long at all because they have a feeling of a greater entitlement. So therefore, they will normally not employ good-looking people in those less attractive jobs.
Okay. And what if you consider yourself to be attractive? Are you more likely to get promoted if you are an attractive person?
The answer, unfortunately, is yes. Whether we like it or not, that is the fact. That it's been shown over the years that the good-looking people tend to get more promotions and get bigger pay rises. And they think it's down to the fact that they are more confident. So they're able to sell themselves better, ask for much more, because, again, this sense of entitlement they have, being good-looking, they're therefore able to command higher salaries, get promotions, because they show much more confidence than what potentially not as attractive people show.
But you have also claimed that sometimes the person hiring may not hire an attractive person because they feel intimidated.
This is the other way around. So I've come across a number of occasions where, particularly females recruiting, if the female they're interviewing they feel is better looking than they are, they generally won't like it because they don't want to employ someone better looking than themselves. So that's where being attractive can be a disadvantage for you, because clearly a female will not want someone who's better looking than her in the same department or same company because they feel threatened by it.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
And I love this story that you've told before, but please, for those who are new to this, tell it again, how you were instructed by a real estate agent to hire a receptionist and...
Yes. Yep, the criteria for the job was just find me a looker. Don't need them to have any brains whatsoever. Just find me a looker. That was the criteria.
Didn't have to have work skills. Didn't
none whatsoever. Just wanted a looker. Simple as that. That was the criteria.
So what about people who turned up for the job that,
I hate to say it, weren't lookers.
I couldn't put them forward. There was no point because he was quite explicit. That's what I need. I need a looker. They just need to look good when people walk in. That's the impression I want to give people. So if they don't look good, don't send them to me.
Yeah, but that's discrimination, isn't it? But hard.
Absolutely. Look, it's discrimination, but it's also an employer saying, this is what my business needs.
I want a pretty face at reception.
Yeah, basically, yeah. That's what he wants. He thinks it helps him sell the business better. So is that discrimination or just simply an employer saying, I know what my business needs? That's the grey area, that one.
Yeah, very hard to prove. Mm. All right, Superior People Recruitment. Graeme Wynn's our employment expert on the night shift. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Luke.
Yeah, I still can't work out why your wife hired you.
I must have got through the application in a strange way, that's for sure, yeah.
Yeah. You're punching way above your weight there, mate.
Absolutely, I am.
Yeah, at least you know it. At least you know it.
Absolutely.
Have a good day.
Thanks, Luke.
Employment expert Graeme Wynn.